Hello and welcome to April's Library Chat, the monthly podcast by the Iowa Library for the Blind and Print Disabled, where we chat about books and podcasts with library staff and guests. I'm Sarah Williford, Library Director, and here with me today for our episode is some familiar voices if you listen to our Library News or Braille Bits podcasts. We have Denise Bean, our Youth Services Librarian.
Hi, everyone.
Leslie Heinzler, our Special Services Librarian.
Hello.
And Tyler Sweat, our Accessible Media Specialist.
Hi.
So what is Library Chat? Leslie and Tyler have been doing the Library News podcast for over a year, and it's great for hearing what is new in the library, upcoming events, and about books. And Denise has been doing Braille Bits podcast, taking us through Braille lessons with special guests, learning about all things Braille. So we decided to expand the podcast the library offers to include one that discusses books and podcasts around what we hope are fun and interesting topics. If you missed any of our earlier episodes, the podcast along with a book list is available on our library blog at iowalibrary.blog. So, thanks for joining me today, and happy National Library Week.
Yeah.
Yay. Yay.
You too.
So April 4th through the 10th is National Library Week, and it's kind of a time we highlight the essential role libraries, librarians, and library workers play in transforming lives and strengthening communities. This year's theme for National Library Week is Welcome to Your Library, which is really just promoting how far libraries extend beyond their four walls that everybody knows, library building, to reach people where they're at. So, as we know, after the last year and some, people visit us virtually or in person, and libraries are accessible and inclusive places that foster a sense of belonging and community through learning, discovery, and exploration. And did you know that National Library Week has been going on since 1958?
Wow.
Wow, no.
It is a national observance by the American Library Association. And so, libraries, I'd say, probably worldwide, celebrate this time and libraries. And during National Library Week, on the Tuesday, is National Library Workers' Day. And this is where we honor library staff, patrons, administrators, and other groups, recognize the valuable contributions by all library workers. So happy National Library Workers' Day.
Yes.
And also, the Wednesday of National Library Week, we celebrate National Library Outreach Day. And this one usually is focused around kind of the bookmobiles and those pieces, but kind of expanded that just because of the different types of outreach we've had to do because of COVID and kind of having to switch gears to virtual. So that day meant a lot this year as well. So because April celebrates National Library Week, we decided our topic for our podcast should be libraries and librarians. If you think back to your younger days, some of us have to think farther back.
We just do.
When you didn't actually work in a library, what are some of those library memories you have? You can say good and the bad.
I have to think back to the library days for myself, and it always included the animals that were in. I'm not kidding you. Like, what's on display? And it seemed like they always had either a fish tank or some type of reptile. But I used to love to go in and just get cozy in a spot in the library and meet up with my friends. And, of course, you had to be quiet. But, of course, that's where you made your plans for later on that day. But just the smell, just the different smells and just the excitement of going. And the bookmarks. I always got a bookmark when I went to my library as a kid. So, yeah.
Yep.
A colossal of things.
I remember one distinct memory is just graduating from the children's area to like the young adult.
Because oh,
yes. It was across this walkway. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to go to that side today and not look at kids' books. And I was really excited.
Oh,
and then one time I got in trouble because they thought I was too young to be
you
over there.
You got in trouble, Leslie?
I'm not in trouble, but I wasn't following the rules, apparently.
Uh-oh.
Which is not like me.
I know.
But yeah, just graduating from the children's area was kind of exciting.
Cool.
That's funny because my memory is of our public library, which at the time seemed huge, but now when I go in where I grew up, it's not, but it's a lovely library. Mm-hmm. But I remember I was just like amazed that I just got to walk around and look at any book because my mom was always over in the mystery section, and so we'd get to go over in the children's, but then I could, like, wander down nonfiction and fiction and just look at all sorts of stuff, and then you could pick as many as you wanted. That was, like, amazing to me.
And the library cards. And the library cards were super special.
They were.
I mean, you had that, you were in. Grown up, might as well drive at age 9 and get a library card.
You see, ours, Johnston's old public library was tiny, and it was combined with the city hall and the police station. Yeah. So we always thought it was cool because you'd probably see a cop when you went down there to go to the library. Just because it was all combined into one.
Oh, wow.
It was really dinky before they made the new one. And so then I remember going out to Iowa City to visit my grandma's, and we went to the Iowa City Public Library, and I thought we were in, like, the mega mall of libraries. I think I was pretty little, but I was like, oh, this is a little different. This is what a library is supposed to be.
In my elementary school, too, to talk about my school library, it was back when the concept for elementary schools was, like, the library was in the middle and the classrooms were around
design, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But our library was, like, in a pit, so you had to go down, like, 3 steps, and there was huge one side with all windows, and it had, like, a window seat, and you could go over and curl up. But it was not a quiet library, because any class leaving or coming from their classroom was walking around the outside, because there was no walls of the library, so you got to, like, see a lot of people too.
Yeah.
Over in your
social area.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'm on to you. You were actually there for that boy.
But I do remember it was, like, in kind of this, we called it, like, the pit, because you went down some stairs.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
It does.
It was Norman Rockwell Elementary School.
Oh,
wow. We were the Rockwell Roadrunners.
Wow.
As you think back to, a lot of librarians I know have, like, their origin story, how they always knew they were going to be a librarian. So, did you guys always know you were going to be a librarian?
No.
How about you?
I had to ask this question of this group because I kind of knew.
We're very eclectic, all of us, in our histories of being a librarian. It's kind of funny.
I mean, I can start.
I think you started me, Sarah, on the librarian stuff.
Well, I can tell you, when I went to college, freshman college, I was going to be an environmental scientist, specifically to save manatees.
Oh.
So, no. I was not always going to be a librarian, but I went on a journey and met a professor that thought I should take a library science class, and here I am. So mine is no.
What?
Mine is no, too, actually. I went for undergrad for something totally different, graduated, worked for a few years, and met a friend who was in library school, and she was like, you need to do this. And so I looked into it, and I was like, yeah, I do need to do this. And then I went home and told my mom. She's like, yeah, I could have told you that when you were 9 years old you were going to be a librarian. I was like, oh, okay, well, come full circle.
Yeah, because, see, I had the opposite, where a lot of family members would have lost a lot of money if they said, well, Tyler ever worked for a library.
You know, I can't even see that with you.
Yeah, so, no, I know my title isn't a librarian or anything like that, but going to school for PE teaching and then being a PE teacher for 9 years, like, it's sort of, it was an interesting path to find myself here, but I'm happy I made it.
And all of us can agree we're happy that you're here.
Yes.
I don't know, I'm a Brailleist by been Brailling for probably 13, 14, 15 years now, so Brailleist, and find it passionate, and books need Brailled, and, well, I don't know, the story's long on how I became a librarian, but as, like, your mom believed in you, Leslie, I had someone believe in me, and this is how I landed on this doorstep, and I'm very grateful to be here.
I will say, though,
love it.
I felt like once I got that first that glimpse, I was hooked. I knew. Mm-hmm. I knew at that point.
Same here. Yeah.
As a youth librarian, I see the kids. Ugh. That's the best part, is just, you know, all books. I mean, just all of it. Mm-hmm. Can't put a price on it. It's pretty cool.
I think I've heard a lot of stories of how people came to libraries, but I think I've heard more stories about how at, like, age 6 they were running their neighborhood library.
Oh, really?
Making, you know, stamping books and checking them out. So I don't really have that.
We don't have that story.
No.
I think ours are like a maze to where we got today. Like a maze.
So let's talk books. Leslie put together a great list of library and librarian books that we shared on our blog in honor of National Library Week. And I did a bit of research and looked at some different sites and different lists to see what books were popular on the topic of libraries mm-hmm. and librarians. And I have some of my favorites, and I want to see if they match the list out there. But I will say what's cool about Leslie's list and the other lists as well is the number of genres that were represented and how well the topic of libraries and librarians fit into, you want romance, mm-hmm. you want science fiction, right. nonfiction. Do it's we have there. A Western? I don't know if we had a Western.
It would be.
I'm sure there is.
Someone, yeah, I'm sure there's one out there.
So, and I know when I talked to you, Leslie, about the list, you said this was like hardly scratched
yeah, it was just
the surface.
Tip of the iceberg. It was crazy.
So I thought we could go through some of these, and I will admit, I haven't read some of these, so they are now on my list. But one of the first ones was The Bodies in the Library by Marty Wingate, and this sounds like a classic murder, because the main character is Agatha Christie. It's an Agatha Christie fan fiction writers group is found dead in the stacks.
In the stacks.
So, and I know, and I can't remember the series, but I'll put it on the list on the blog. There's one where she's a small town librarian and in a small town, and it's a cozy mystery, but.
Yeah. There's a lot of those. I noticed when I was doing some research for that list that there are a lot, like, at least probably 10 series that are cozy mysteries set in libraries. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be a popular popular theme. Cozy mystery in a library.
The Giver of Stars, that was on quite a few lists as well by, help me?
Jojo Moyes.
Yes, Jojo Moyes. Alice Van Cleve is still trying to adjust to married life and living in Kentucky after being raised in England. When offered the chance to join a group of women to deliver Eleanor Roosevelt's new traveling library, she jumps at it, but they face dangers. Here, Her Perfect Affair by Priscilla Oliveras. Responsible Rosa Fernandez has planned her career with precision, finally landing a job as a librarian. So she knew what she wanted to do. But she's been harboring a secret crush on dreamy Jeremy Taylor, and after one dance with him at her sister's wedding, Rosa longs to let loose for the first time. So, there's your romance. And there's quite a few nonfiction. So, this one, Information Hunters, when librarians, soldiers, and spies banded together in World War II Europe. And Reading Behind Bars, a true story of literature, law, and life as a prison librarian. And then the other one that I read that I really, really liked was The Library Book by Susan Orlean. This is the author takes a look at the unsolved mystery of the most catastrophic library fire in U.S. history. In 1986, a fire broke out at the Los Angeles Public Library and destroyed or damaged more than 1 million books. And it examines evolution of public libraries while celebrating their value in society. That one was really good. They took a look at the different directors, how they all handled the community changing, but also in the part of this is this unsolved arson case.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And to this day, they still haven't solved it.
No. The other one that was on a lot of lists was The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. And the summary of that one is, after she attempts suicide, Nora wakes up in a mysterious library. The shelves are full of books, each the story of another reality. One tells the story of her life as it is, along with other books for the other lives you could have lived.
I have to laugh, and you say, it made me think of something. And this is what's fun about a podcast, you can just say what's on your mind. So when we were doing our youth library space, and we had dreams of the vision, like we would dream about what, because we've created our youth library space from scratch, basically. And that's why it's kind of neat, the story, the podcast we're going to talk about today. But how you dream about, you know, you have these dreams about what it's going to be like. It made me think of that. But kind of neat. Yeah.
A couple other titles I found, Ink and Bone, that's the Great Library series by Rachel Kane. This one, I'm going to read the summary because I thought this one was kind of, I haven't read it, thought it was kind of fascinating, but so it kind of flips a little bit of what we've been talking about. But ruthless and supremely powerful, the Great Library is now a presence in every major city, governing the flow of knowledge to the masses. Alchemy allows the library to deliver the content of its greatest works of history instantly, but the personal ownership of books is expressly forbidden. So when his friend inadvertently commits heresy by creating a device that could change the world, Jess discovers that those who control the Great Library believe knowledge is more valuable than any human life.
Wow.
I thought that was a curious
take. Sounds like a good one.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Look into that one.
And then the other one, I was talking to Leslie about this earlier, was I forgot the Time Traveler's Wife. I forgot Henry, the main character, the Time Traveler, was a librarian.
Yeah, that was a good story.
And another series I wanted to mention was Thursday Next series by Jasper Ford. So this one is also fascinating to me. So Great Britain, circa 1985, time travel is routine, cloning is a reality. Dodos are resurrected pet of choice, and literature is taken very, very seriously. England is a virtual police state where an ant can get lost literally in a Wordsworth poem, and forging by ironic verse is a perishable offense. All of this business as usual for Thursday Next, renowned special operative in literary detection. But when someone begins kidnapping characters from works of literature and plucks Jane Eyre from the pages of Bronte's novel, Thursday is faced with the challenge of her career. So mystery, they're probably not cozy. And then finally, I had to add, because of the Iowa ties, is Dewey's Nine Lives, the legacy of a small-town library cat who inspired millions. So Vicki Myron, the author, and also former director of the Spencer, the public library in Spencer, writes about Dewey the cat who lived at the library. So I know this isn't even close to the full list of books, but I don't know if you guys have any I didn't mention. I have a children's list here I'll get to.
I don't know, Sold on Monday was Christina McMorris. It's also, have you guys ever heard of that? Yeah. It's a good book.
It was actually, it's a library, kind of ties into being a librarian, but...
Good book. Okay. Oh, yeah. My list.
You guys need to research it.
Okay, we will. So of course there's a lot of children's. Lot. So I just grabbed a couple. But there's a mouse in the library. Dragon. Can't think of who else. But there was The Boy Who Was Raised by Librarians by Carla Morris. Escape from Mr. Limoncello's Library. Matilda, my Roald Dahl. And then one of our favorites, I don't know if you've heard of this series, but my kids read these, I read these, and they thought it was funny. I think it's just because their mom is a librarian, but it was Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarians by Brandon Sanderson. But so on his 13th birthday, foster child Alcatraz Smedry gets a bag of sand in the mail, his only inheritance from his father and mother. He soon learns that is no ordinary bag of sand. It is quickly stolen by the cult of evil librarians who are taking over the world by spreading misinformation and suppressing the truth. Alcatraz must stop them using the only weapon he has, an incredible talent for breaking things. That's his superpower.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that
sounds
good.
Sounds like a good one.
It's like a good one. Yeah. But I think they just thought it was funny that it's the librarians who are...
the evil.
Trying to take over the world.
Yes. And finally, the one picture book I grabbed kind of leads us into our podcast, but it's Miss Moore Thought Otherwise, How Anne Carroll Moore Created Libraries for Children. And the picture book tells the story of Miss Anne Carroll Moore, who created the first children's room in the New York Public Library in 1894. That takes us to our podcast. We are going to take a look at. So there are, again, just like books, there are a lot of podcasts out there about libraries and librarians, by libraries and by librarians. We have three. it's a big list out there. But a podcast that kind of stood out to us, it's not specifically about the podcast itself, about libraries or librarians, but it told the story of Anne Carroll Moore, and that's what got our attention. So this month's podcast, we chose episode 415 called Goodnight Nobody by 99% Invisible. And a little bit about this podcast. 99% Invisible is a narrative podcast hosted by Roman Mars about the thought that goes into the things we don't think about, the unnoticed architecture and design that shape our world. And in this episode, again, they discuss Anne Carroll Moore, the public library, the New York Public Library, public libraries in general, collection development, children and libraries. They cover a whole lot of topics. So a quick summary of what we're gonna kind of delve into with the podcast. How it started was to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the New York Public Library, a list was published of 10 books that had been checked out the most in the history of the library. And most of these on the list were children's books, like Cat in the Hat, Where the Wild Things Are. But curiously absent from the list was a familiar classic, Goodnight Moon. And according to writer Dan Coyes, this wasn't a function of popularity, but the product of a decision made by a particular children's librarian who kept it off the shelves of the New York Public Library system for decades. So actually from the 1940s through the early 1970s. And this is where we get into the complex figure that is Miss Anne Carroll Moore. It appears that she is the creator of the first children's library space, or children's room, but she also kept Goodnight Moon out of and off of the New York Public Library shelves for almost 30 years. And again, here lies the fascinating and complex story of a librarian. Moore wanted whimsical fantasy, once upon a time stories, mm-hmm. but was at odds with the progressive Bank Street School, who felt children were curious about the world around them. So now enters teacher and author Margaret Weiss Brown, the author of Goodnight Moon. So, as you listen to this podcast, I have a couple questions. we hear from different sides that they felt that Moore was she a villain? Was she a visionary? What do you think of the contradicting perceptions of her?
I thought she seemed more visionary.
But yeah.
I thought she was more on the villain side. I thought she was on a big power trip with her controlling
stubborn.
What goes into the library and
her stamp.
Her stamp.
Yes, and that it's her kind of taking it over from that regard.
Yeah.
Because like the way that, you know, libraries should be is that they're not the ones selecting content. They don't get to approve what goes. From a standpoint of, like, I don't like this book.
Right.
I think Goodnight Moon is a horror book or whatever. Like, so it doesn't belong in our library versus, you know, even though everyone else in the world could have it. So, yeah, definitely on the villain side.
Yeah.
And collection development's always tricky. It needs to reflect the community in which you serve. And that means librarians have to set aside their personal feelings, thoughts, bias. You know, we have to be always looking at who we're serving. So the fact that writers had to come to her with their manuscripts beforehand and get that stamp.
Get the stamp of approval.
Non-approval.
I mean, I had to step back for a minute. I was sort of in awe that, you know, a librarian had, at that time, had that much power over, I mean, basically that was publishing.
Like, if she didn't give it the approval, it wasn't
gonna going
to get published.
Anywhere.
Like, literally, like, they're like, I guess we're not going to make this book.
Right.
Like,
and they hoped that she would give them feedback or comments.
Mm-hmm.
It was also interesting that she only wanted the whimsical, the once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Mm-hmm. Because if you look at Goodnight Moon, it's, you know, it's a bunny. just kind of going through and saying goodnight.
Right. Sweet.
To
right.
the, so it's...
It's a great book, but it's not like a timeline of events and like the Once Upon right. a Time. Like there's no sort of hero's journey in Goodnight
no.
Moon.
Right.
Like
that's
so.
True. Not a soft, you know, moral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that, you know, in the podcast they referred to that the Bank Street as a progressive school mm-hmm. in that they wanted kids to have books and information that related to their lives. Where if you looked at the children's spaces she designed, she was kind of doing the exact opposite, which was benefiting the kids. I mean, they mm-hmm. waited in line so they could touch a seashell, which they weren't going to get in that urban environment.
Right.
So in that, you know, I had to give her props for that, for understanding what the kids weren't being able to access and mm-hmm. weren't getting to experience.
Yeah. And I think just like the kind of the timeline that kids weren't allowed in libraries, I found just insane on top of that before it even mm-hmm. existed. We're yeah. like... And then granted, it was the late 1800s, so you're talking an era of time where children are seen, not heard.
Right.
You
yes,
know, and they
right.
and their reading skills were definitely less due to that fact right there, right. where they were,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So I thought that was just an interesting kind of cut yeah. of history where libraries are for adults.
And the mentality was, if they're not going to read, why do they even need to go to the library?
Yeah, exactly.
Or is it kind of that mentality?
Yeah. Exactly.
And that, I mean, they went into it a little bit, the kind of the fight that had to happen to be allowed to even try with a children's room
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
the library, and the fact that she did get that done, mm-hmm. and then was able to implement it in the other branches,
right.
and then other libraries started doing it, was impressive. But then there's this whole collection of elements.
No, but then there's this other side. There's like two sides, really.
She definitely
yeah.
had her vision.
Mm-hmm. She did.
And was sticking to it. But the fact for 30 years, no Goodnight Moon.
I know. Well,
but it's like the reasoning behind it made no sense. Like, this is the most harmless whatever book.
I know. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing. Like, it wasn't, like, the occult. It wasn't, like, you couldn't even draw any conclusions. You know, like, to find a valid reason, or not a valid reason, but
right.
find a reason that at least fits a narrative, besides, like, oh, I just don't like this book.
Yep.
Well, and I have to say her stubborn side, which we have learned about this lady, is probably what allowed her to get so far.
Oh, for
you
sure.
You know, that villain
yeah.
part of her, you
yeah.
know, it's probably has allowed her to just really grow everything the way
mm-hmm.
she's wanted to.
I will say what gave me pause and what I always reflect on as, you know, library director is when I retire.
Which won't be for a long time.
But she kept coming to meetings. I don't know if you guys
yeah,
remember
that. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
yeah.
Because it was after she had retired. She still had influence over
yes.
what the library
yeah.
was doing.
Yeah,
she was invested.
They'd try and change mm-hmm. the meeting room, and she'd still show up.
Yeah.
the lengths they went through to...
Yeah.
So you're saying you're not going to show up to our meetings after
yeah,
you've...
Yeah, I guess.
I feel that I the next person will be ready, and
you won't need to be
rain.
Sitting in.
Let them do their thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, our next step will be...
Because I think we've talked about that before, is, you know, there is a way, so
mm-hmm.
there'd be, like, my way or Leslie's way, but
mm-hmm.
that's not the only way.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
maybe after... I mean, how long was she there? Well, over 30 years.
Yeah, over 30 yeah. years.
There's quite probably time. Sometimes it's time for...
Mm-hmm. It to be someone else's
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I mean, in some regards, I'm like, I respect the work she did, and then other times I think, might have pushed that boundary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a stamp.
She's making her
yeah.
staff talk to that
stamp.
Puppet and, like,
yeah.
treat the puppet
I know.
Like a person.
We didn't talk about the puppet, but you know how I, you know how I feel about puppets. And the fact that the puppet accidentally got left in it.
Yeah,
a taxi
cab.
Accidentally.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm sure it was a real accident.
Wink, wink, right?
Yes. Yeah, so there was
a taxi driver got an extra tip to keep a puppet in his go get lost.
So there was a whole puppet piece as well. So she might have been a bit eccentric.
Eccentric, yeah.
That's a good word.
Great description, actually.
Is there anything, last thoughts, libraries, librarians, and Carol Moore?
For someone who doesn't have the library history knowledge that I've collected, I thought it was just an interesting story of children's libraries in general and just kind of this whole almost sort of story of playing both sides of youth spaces and censorship and everything that kind of went in. So.
Right, I agree.
Just the perception, because I think right out of the gate, didn't they describe her as stern, with a bun?
Yeah, I think they, like the stereotypical librarian. She was.
But I don't know if you went to their, the 99% Invisible website, they had a picture of her.
Mm.
And she didn't have a bun. And she was actually...
She did not. She
sort of smiling.
The image described in words did not describe her,
Her hair short, pulled, I'd say like pulled back gently.
Yes, that's a good way to say that.
Not severe. And so it's funny how the perceptions, and maybe, I know when we started talking earlier, I said, here, you're good and you're bad, because I have heard a lot of trauma from people about librarians they encountered in libraries. And, like, their whole youth, they didn't go back.
Wow.
And it always seems to lead to a severe-looking, bun-wearing librarian.
Constantly shushing.
Not that we're against the buns, because they're okay.
No, but it is always kind of that stereotype comes back. Mm-hmm. So that's why I asked about bad. I don't have a bad.
No.
I don't.
Mm-mm.
But I'm trying to think of it. I don't think any of my librarians had buns.
I don't think so. No. No buns.
I don't remember.
Leslie, can you put your hair in a bun tomorrow?
Yeah.
I want to see that on you.
Well, I think this was a fun way to wrap up National Library Week this month, and kind of an interesting take on librarianship in general. And I do think it also shows just how far impact libraries can have. I mean, she alone had the impact on on New York.
Mm-hmm.
And the youth of New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Industry, publishing, yeah. So, I think that was a good pick, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Any last thoughts?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
It was actually fun.
Well, thank you, Denise, Leslie, and Tyler, for joining me for our April Library Chat. We'll be posting the book list on our online public catalog and on our blog for our listeners who are interested in any of the titles we discussed. And again, our library blog is iowalibrary.blog. Or you can contact the library at 515-281-1323 to ask that the titles be put on your book list.
Sounds good.
So, again, you can find all of our library podcasts on our blog as well if you want to catch up on other episodes. And we will also feature our library news podcast on our audio cartridges. So, thanks everybody for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll chat with you again next month.
Good.
See you later.
See ya.
Bye.